Hello, everybody. I'm Lisa Burwell, your host of V Speaks, Conversations with Heart and Soul. And we've got a great program for you today. We are going to be speaking with Jane Poynter, who is a pioneer, an explorer, a visionary, an aerospace founder and owner of Space Perspectives, and many, many, many more things prior to her new venture into space tourism. Jane, welcome.
Hi there. Good to be with you.
Thank you. So good that you're here. Well, I think we did write about you in our October issue, I was telling you before, and we've got to get you some copies too, on our article, Space Travel, the New Frontier. And you, better than anybody, is going to be able to tell us all about that. I'm so fascinated with your background because it's so varied and it seems, you know, like fodder for obviously a great movie script because of your adventurous life that you've led. But take us back, like when you were getting out of high school in your early 20s, like did you see yourself back then as doing what you're doing now? Like did you always, were you always a dreamer and an explorer at heart?
Well, I was one of those kids who was very naughty and was hiding under my blankets at night with what in England we call a torch, a flashlight, and I would be reading science fiction. Isaac Asimov was always my go-to. I loved it. I loved the imagination. I loved the future pull, right? It's about the future. And what's so exciting for me now is that so much of that sci-fi is real today. We're actually beginning yes. to see it come true.
Yes, I feel the same way, but I never had that pull like you did early on. So to me, it seems like it came all of a sudden to like the forefront in the last couple of years, or maybe the last year to me, that it's a reality, that we finally are at this reality that seemed very much like science fiction prior to now. But you have been researching and exploring, you know, unlike myself. I mean, honestly, you are our 21st podcast that we've done in the last year. And I definitely, in reading about you, definitely feel like very unworthy of all that you've accomplished because it's pretty fierce. So just to set up a little bit of your background, because that will lead us to where you are right now running this magnificent company, this luxury space tourism company called Space Perspectives. So you start out in the agriculture field, an environmentalist. Tell us a little bit about that experience and how that like segued to Biosphere 2 and how that segued to where you are now.
Well, I got so lucky. I actually ended up on the Biospherian training program completely by accident. So I was out at sea on a research boat, actually doing some really interesting science, doing some research with the people on board around, of course, coral reefs and things like that. And because we were out at sea for so long, and this was a sailing boat, by the way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we were out at sea for like a month at a time. So it's an analog to being enclosed in a biosphere, to being on another planet in a space base. And so it was biospherian training. Well, I didn't know it when I signed up. I just thought, oh, sign me up. I want to sail across the Indian Ocean and up the Red Sea, which is what I ended up doing. And so it was sort of part of my science background, and I got on there and never looked back. I was invited to go to the biosphere. And another part of my biosphere in training was being in the outback of Australia, living out a childhood dream of being a cowgirl, because I was literally rounding up cattle on horseback. But it was also biospherian training, and we were, when we were not riding around on cattle, doing really interesting research on repasturing this very badly damaged grasslands in Australia that had been grazed by sheep for so many years. And so that was also biospherian training, because you're also out in the middle of nowhere, relying on just a handful of other people and yourself, mm-hmm. really in an incredibly remote environment. Mm-hmm. And so I was invited to go to the biosphere. That was quite the adventure, being a biosphere too.
So how long was the research and development process before you were actually able to live in Biosphere 2 for 2 years and 20 minutes, as you said on TED Talks?
So just so that everybody remembers what Biosphere 2 is. Biosphere 1 is the planetary biosphere, the biosphere we all live in, and Biosphere 2, by analogy, is the very first human-made biosphere, a 3-acre enclosed environment that at the time we were living in it was enclosed tighter than the International Space Station. And we were really testing to see, is it even possible? Can you take a biosphere that has evolved on a planetary scale and have it persist in a small container, which really 3 acres is a tiny container, right, for a full-blown biosphere, have it persist and support human life? So that was really what we were testing. And if you can do that, can you then use it on another planet as a space base, or use it to understand the biosphere that we all inhabit right here on planet Earth? So I was unbelievably lucky that in 1982, I was in the meeting where Buckminster Fuller, told Ed Bass, who was the person who put the money into the biosphere, hey, you guys need to do a biosphere. This is the time, because the meeting was about space biospheres and doing something like this. So in 1982, the team agreed, yep, this is what we're gonna do. And then in 1991, I went in for the very first 2-year mission. So that's a very short period of time.
Well,
especially you have to put yourself back in historic time, right? In the 1980s. I mean, we barely had computers. There was no such thing as the internet. You know, yes. I mean, you know, the cell phone was the size of a suitcase, right? So yes. this is how we were going about. I mean, you know, right when we were starting the biosphere, you know, this thing comes out called this blazing fast computer, a 386, that really enabled it. So, you know, that was where we were at the time with designing. And so doing it that fast was amazing. And we went in 1991 for our first 2 years and 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And some of the takeaways from that, I'm sure there are a million, but the one you reference on your TED Talks is about, you know, some trouble that you were having with like your oxygen levels, because there was, you know, some things that were going on there that you needed to correct, obviously, and that what that taught you about then when you went out and you're trying to grow foods like in the desert or, you know, Ethiopia and all that. That was after that, correct?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, one of the things we were trying to do is to really figure out, is this even possible? And we did demonstrate that it's possible, but you bring out some of the challenges that we had. We had an issue with our oxygen, which one might think is a little important to get right when it's a life support system. However, it was a research project. And so we figured out through an incredibly extensive research program where our oxygen was going, and it turned out it was actually being absorbed by the concrete that was inside the biosphere. So one of the things that we really learned, not only is it possible to design biospheres, but then how do you think about that in the context of the planet? You were bringing up the sort of that amazing African project I was involved in. And so think about how we recycled the water inside, just as an example, inside Biosphere 2. So I would have my bi-monthly cup of coffee. Yep, we had coffee very infrequently because we were growing all our own food. We were recycling all our water. We were recycling all our air. We breathed the same oxygen over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so when I drank my cup of coffee, that would go through me and into our waste treatment system that was all biological, mm-hmm. what we would now think of as a marsh, it's very common, but then was actually not at all, was a marsh treatment system. So then the water would come out of that, not as drinkable water yet, but as high nutrient water that would then get put on the farm. And this is the magic part. So the plants take up the water out of the soil, and out of their leaves comes pure drinking water. So the plants become the filters for your water. We then had mechanical clouds, and we took the water out of the air and drank it again. So, you know, the water's going round and round and round. But that is exactly what happens on planet Earth. Right. And so sort of one of the big lessons is thinking holistically about our planet and how everything flows through it. And that's one of the projects we did in Africa was how you treat water and turn it into gold, really, from a waste treatment system.
Right. So how many years was that before you got into basically the aerospace industry? From that, you know, after you get out of Biosphere 2, then you go...
Right away. Okay. Oh, I started, so Tabor and I, so I was inside Biosphere 2 with the person who became my lifelong partner and business partner.
Tabor
McCallum, that's right. And so Tabor and I decided to co-found a company called Paragon Space Development Corporation with another person, Grant Anderson, who is running the company today. That business, we started it from inside Biosphere 2. And the idea there was that we were going to be the company that was really developing life support systems for, you know, other planets, right? One day we would be taking people to Mars and taking people to the moon and having this, and they would be thriving in the systems that we designed. And sure enough, that company today has technologies on just about every human spacecraft out there made by American companies. Including the International Space Station and soon going to the moon.
Unbelievable. So, you know, this past summer, you know, with the race to be, you know, the billionaires that were racing, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and everything, and Sir Richard Branson, how do you all talk to one another? It seems like it's a very small, elite group of people. How... compatible or are you very competitive with one another? Are you sharing information? It seems like it would be terribly competitive in the field that you're in right now. But what is it like? I mean, I know you did some work on some technology with Elon Musk a couple years ago, right? Did you not?
Yeah, so actually Tabor and I worked with Elon even before he started SpaceX. Tabor helped him and some of his early proposals that he wrote and some of the early design of the Crew Dragon, actually. So it is in many ways a small industry, and we do know each other, and the companies in some regards work together. But you know, for us, we're so differentiated from what everybody else is doing that we don't really consider ourselves directly in competition. You know, there is...
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, because it's different.
There is so much demand for space travel at this time that, you know, the rising tide really does float all boats.
Yes.
And so let's maybe just talk a second about who we are and what we're doing, because it'll give people an idea of why we're not in competition.
Right.
So I think when most people think about space travel, they think about spacesuits and the right stuff and rockets and being uncomfortable and training and high G's and all that comes with that. And, you know, that's perhaps very exciting, not for everyone.
Right.
And so we wanted to find, Tabor and I have been looking for a long time to how do we find a way to take people to space that really gives them that quintessential astronaut experience of seeing Earth in space, but doing so in a way that is accessible and comfortable and even perhaps relaxing. And space balloons is the way to do it. So we use these huge balloons that are the size of a football field when they're fully inflated. And literally you could pick up an entire, probably more than one football field and spin it around inside the space balloon at altitude once it's inflated.
That's hard to imagine, that float, that ascending, something that large.
Yeah, so, and it does, and very gracefully, it goes to space at 12 miles an hour. So you're going to space at cycling speed.
Yes.
So that's in part how it becomes so gentle and smooth. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just really, the whole thing, it's so smooth. And so our flight takes 2 hours to go to space. You're about 2 hours in space and then another 2 hours to come back down. So not only is it smooth, you know, it's also a fairly long flight. we have a bar on board, and you know that there of course will be a gourmet experience as well. And of course, if you have a bar and a 6-hour flight, you better have a loo, which we do. And you can be on board for some of it at any rate on Wi-Fi, posting to your favorite social media. So it's really an incredibly different experience than anybody else out there.
Right. And your test flight just happened this past summer, right? And was successful. Is that right? And landed in the Gulf of Mexico. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. So we did our first test flight with Spaceship Neptune, as we're calling our vehicle. Yes. And it was actually a capsule simulator for this flight. We did launch from right adjacent to Kennedy Space Center in Florida. We went up to full altitude of 108,000 feet, 20 miles up above the atmosphere. So you're seeing the blackness of space. You know, the sun is completely in a black sky. You see that incredible, iconic, thin blue line of our atmosphere as the vehicle went across the peninsula of Florida and then splashed down in the Gulf of Mexico, right where we wanted it, next to the ship that then picked everything up and brought it ashore.
Well, that must have been an exhilarating day of celebration.
Right? Yes, it was. It was amazing. Look, you know, also, you know, the thing that is exciting for us about this technology, it's also really safe. So it was an exhilarating day, but we also had a really, you know, good idea that it was going to work, because these balloons, our team has actually flown this kind of balloon many times before. NASA and other governments around the world have flown it 1,000 times or more. So in the main flight system that carries the capsule through the entire flight, through up and down, is very well tested. And then of course, between the capsule and the balloon is what's called a pre-deployed parachute. It's a parachute that's already strung out, so it can't get snagged as it comes out of a bag, because it's already out and strung out. And it has already been flown from these altitudes, you know, thousands of times, and has never failed. So the entire vehicle is incredibly safe as well, which is the other reason that we're super excited about being able to use this technology.
Right. And it will, you will go up 100,000 feet, right?
That's right. So, okay. That's right. So we go about 100, just over 100,000 feet. Mm-hmm. So we're above 99% of the Earth's atmosphere. And that last 1% goes from just a little below where we're going all the way out way past the International Space Station. So this is that last little bit of you're basically in a vacuum. It's just going to be an extraordinary experience for people, I think.
Okay, so 9 people can fit in Neptune, right? When you...
That's right.
Okay, 9 people. So, and
So just to be clear, it's 8 passengers and a pilot.
And a pilot. Okay, and then the cost is $125,000, which is very affordable, relatively speaking, to the cost of the billionaires race that happened this past summer. But you've already sold 400 seats, which is $50 million, correct?
Yeah, actually, we're well north of that now.
Oh, okay.
We're well north of that now.
Are you kidding me? Congratulations.
No, I'm not. So okay. Also, just to be clear, for right now, we're asking people to put down a refundable deposit, anywhere from $1,000 to $25,000, depending on how early you want to fly. So, but as you said, we've sold almost 500 tickets. Okay. And the demand is huge. So our first year is fully sold out, and we're well into our second year of flight operations.
How many flights will you do in a year?
So our first year, we're going to go pretty slowly.
Okay.
All from the Florida area, maybe from Kennedy Space Center. And then there are a couple of other spaceports in Florida that we'll be launching from. And so the first year we'll be doing about 25 flights, and then we'll be growing very quickly from there. So the second year, you know, anywhere around 75, and then we're actually going to start having flights from other parts of the world. Mm. So from Florida, you'll see the Florida Peninsula and across the Keys, and maybe even see the Bahamas. But now imagine that you're launching from somewhere where you can see the Northern Lights from space.
Yeah.
Oh, That's going to be amazing.
Yes. This is, and this will be in 24 or 25 that you'll be ready, right? For people to go up.
Yeah. That's right. So we're going to get back into test flights again next year. Once we start test flights again, then you'll see us do routine flights very regularly. Then we'll get into our current plan is to have our first crewed flight, because we can fly this without a human on board. So then we get into the first flight with people on board in 2023, and then our first commercial flight will be around the end of 24.
So at first I was going to ask, you know, if you had to do a lot of marketing to teach people that this travel opportunity exists, but I don't think you do. It almost seems like it's this incredibly pent up, built in desire for people to want to do this. Does that surprise you? It surprises me as a marketing person, actually.
Oh, that's interesting. It doesn't surprise me. Okay. I am, of course, very happy.
Of course.
However, I would say, so, you know, I've been in this industry a long time, right? I've been in this industry for 30 years. I have seen the commercial space travel industry take its first steps, you know, when Spaceship One flew a long time ago, and, you know, then it finally, it's here, and I've so drunk the Kool-Aid. I'm like, I am so sure that there's this huge market. But other people are saying the same thing too now. So that's awesome. Yes. It's not just us from the industry saying that. You know, there's McKinsey has looked at it. We've got Cowen look at it. You know, other groups like that have taken a look at this and have all come back and said, this is huge market, you know, anywhere from 500 to 700 billion total addressable market. And then we're seeing, you know, the kind of uptake that we've had this year, you know, with just, you know, since June, we've had these tickets on sale publicly, and we're almost at 500 tickets. So, you know, this is showing just huge demand. And so for us, it's really just more about, you know, telling people that we're out there, and also having them think about space travel being something that can be so different than the way they think of it classically.
Yes. Well, I was going to ask about, obviously, you're in a tourism travel industry. It just happens to be space, right? So there's all the sort of, you know, marketing that's going to go along with that, just like you would, you know, on Earth. But some of your marketing literature talks about so that your guests, tourists, can get the experience that only the astronauts have had before now, which is like, I can't exactly know what that is, but some of the words that come to mind are like overwhelming, surreal, peaceful, like, and that you probably know you're like a small part of a very large world, but like there's got to be some sort of like well-being, spiritual aspect that must happen also when you are experiencing this too.
So I think that you're really getting to why Tabor and I started this business. So when we were in the biosphere, one of the seminal experiences we had were of being part of our biosphere. You know, I knew moment to moment that the plants around me were giving me my oxygen, that my CO2 was making the plants that was giving me my oxygen, and that we were eating those plants too. And so there was this very tight relationship between us and our biosphere. Mm-hmm. I could see the edges of our world, which normally when we're standing on planet Earth, you can't see the edge of our world, right? Our blue sky looks like it goes to infinity. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that this experience of ours of feeling incredibly connected to and embedded in our biosphere is very akin to the experience that astronauts have when they see Earth in space. Mm-hmm. You know, they suddenly see this planet in the context of this vast vacuum of the cosmos. And they see how tenuously thin that pale blue line of our atmosphere is. And they tend to connect very deeply to the planet and, interestingly, to the singular human family that inhabits it. And you actually see astronauts coming back from space and generally getting much more involved in not only environmental causes, but also social causes.
Yes.
So it has this very, very deep effect on
yes.
most of the astronauts
yes.
who go. So now imagine a society where thousands of people, eventually hundreds of thousands and millions of people have been to space and have had that experience.
Right.
And the ripple effect that will have across society. I mean, that's fundamentally why we started Space Perspective, is to be able to deliver people, offer people the mm-hmm. chance to have that incredible experience.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Tell our listeners and audience how they can become, go aboard the Neptune.
So you can become a space explorer, as we call you when you fly on Spaceship Neptune, by going to our website. You can buy a ticket to space online. And our I know, isn't that awesome?
Yes, it's awesome.
Our website is Space Perspective, singular, spaceperspective.com. And there you can see beautiful videos of what it's going to be like to be there. And imagery actually that we took during the Neptune test flight that we did this year, the Neptune 1 test flight. And you can see what that incredible view is going to be like from that altitude.
Well, thank you so much. I know we could have part 2, 3, 4, and 5, and maybe we'll just have you back on so that we can continue the journey with you. It's fascinating, and I am beyond impressed with you, Jane. Amazing. You are, I am woman, hear me roar, right? I mean, you are just doing it so well. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening to and watching V-Speaks, Conversations with Heart and Soul. Our guest today is Jane Poynter, and we are thrilled to have had her with us. Tune in again the next time that V-Speaks brings you lots of new information and people from all around the world. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye.